sometimes it's a sort of a difficulty of giving a talk after sitting meditation. Sort of like the mind just doesn't want to engage yet sometimes. You sit meditation in order to bring the mind to stillness, and mind becomes very peaceful. And having to sort of get the gears rolling and get the sort of the thoughts lined up, trying to come up with something to talk about. So nothing is sort of popping up into the mind yet. You know, in terms of our practice, you know, there's such a strong emphasis on bringing attention into the present, into the sort of the right here moment. This is where we practice. We're not practicing waiting for the future to do our practice, our training, or harking back to the past and trying to do our practice then. It's about this present moment, this sort of right here. And recognizing that we're making choices in this present moment all the time. And you know, whether the choices are skillful or unskillful, or whether they're sort of clear or clouded, it depends on the quality of attention that we are able to sort of muster up or sustain. So always bringing attention back to the present, bringing our the effort to reflect and consider back into this say right here moment. And you know, this recollection or recognition that the you know, we make a difference in this present moment by being as clear as possible, as by being as collected and reflective as possible in this present moment, because it is this present moment that makes the difference. It's what conditions everything else. And it's not, you know, sometimes and this is just sort of basic, you know, what we call karma. You know, sometimes the use of the kind of the concept of karma is somehow that things are fixed or rigid or have a set quality to them, or that we are inevitable, inheritors of our karma, which we are to a certain extent, but it's not just sort of that we have to, you know, meekly and blindly kind of accept our fates, but it's the when we say we're inheritors of our karma, what it means is that we can take responsibility. We have to take responsibility. We have to recognize well, how do we make a difference? How do we bring attention to the events in our life, the quality of our mind, the circumstances that we're in, so that we're able to attend to those things that are going to lead to happiness and well-being and to freedom from suffering, because that's basically what we want. We're not looking for more trouble. We're not looking for more problems and difficulties. We're looking for ways to sort of enhance the quality of our happiness. And in order to do that, we need to really be considering and reflecting on certain themes. And of course, that's the Buddha's teachings are giving us themes and kind of means of reflecting, like a mirror that we can look back on things or look at things in a reflective way. So one of the themes that the Buddha gives us, encourages us to reflect and consider around, is the themes of what is the benefit. It goes around three qualities: asara, adinnava, nitsarana. And the asara is the benefit. It's actually the Pali word is it sort of has the root in the sweet taste. You know, what is the sweet taste? What's the pleasant aspect of things? And adinnava is the harm, the drawback, and nisarlana is the escape, the way out, the release from things. So that reflecting in this way, we can take experience and look at it from different angles. And there's a discourse where there's a group of monks go to alms in the town, and it isn't time yet they think it's a bit early for food to be prepared or to be ready, so they stop by one of the local parks and say in the Buddha's time, the local parks were places where religious seekers used to hang out and either practice or discuss their philosophies or kind of swap stories about their practices and there's some pretty wild ascetic practices that they used to get up to in those days. I kind of like that image of what parks were actually for in the Buddha's time, were places where religious seekers could gather and kind of share. I mean, nowadays you're park is sort of a kind of a recreation in terms of a very secular thing, but they there was a just this culture of in India, ancient India, and to a certain extent, in present day India, of the kind of ubiquitous nature of religious seekers. They were everywhere. Anyway, the monks go to the park and the different religious seekers sort of see them, and I guess they're younger monks, so they're asked, you're kind of challenged by these other wanderers, and saying, we hear the Buddha teaches about sensual desires, and teaches about form, and teaches about feeling, well, that's what we teach about as well. What's the difference? What's the big deal? Why does the Buddha think he's so special, or why do you guys feel you're so special? We teach these things as well. And the monks didn't really know how to answer, so they came to the Buddha, and after their meal, they went for alms round, had their meal, went back to the monastery and talked with the Buddha and related this conversation, and the Buddha just sort of said, well, it's true, but I don't know of any other religious seekers that can point out clearly, say, the benefits, the drawbacks, and the way out. If one isn't looking at, sensual desires, physical form, or feeling from those perspectives, then one is still entangled in them. One hasn't got a clear perspective, and one is neither able to free oneself or to teach others how to free themselves. So then the Buddha launches into a long discourse on the about the nature of, the benefits of sensual desire, the sweet taste of sensual desire, because it's important to recognize that it exists, that it's there. It drives us, it pushes us. You can't just sort of negate or ignore the fact that sensual desires have a pull. They have an attraction. They bring pleasure. But they also have a drawback, and they have a limiting, painful factor to them. And the Buddha goes into the difficulties of just the acquisition of all the trouble it takes to derive a bit of pleasure, delight in somebody. It's hard work. It's just to kind of try to get that bit of pleasure. And then they say the fear of separation and losing that, and how much conflict can be generated. and taking it on a personal level through to a societal level. The Buddha sort of goes through all of the, how much conflict takes place in families, amongst friends, and it's just sensual desire as the root. And you sort of, you trace it back, you say, things haven't changed much. Things haven't really changed. And then through to the sort of the creation of sort of power structures and empires and armies and lead and sort of leaders of countries trying to protect their ability to try to have a little bit of pleasure and have some power to control that. And sensual desire is the root, and just that desire for pleasure. So that reflecting and investigating for ourselves and seeing how it drives the human condition, and it has a painful result, and then how much it clouds the mind. As said the Buddha, so much of the misconduct amongst, within the human realm, generated by sensual desire, and you think of the the prison systems filled with people. And how many people committed crimes because they were looking to make themselves more miserable or more create more difficulties for themselves. This isn't how it works. They're looking to find some pleasure in some way, shape, or form. And how much the prison population, not only are they, committing crimes, but they, most people can't even remember the crimes or not really very clearly, because they were either drunk or stoned or under some of the, and that's generated out of just try to get some pleasure, something, make something comfortable, take away some of the discomfort through sensual, some sort of pleasure, sensual desire. So that the, the Buddha points this out in 2500 years ago, and it's still the same. As miserable as a modern day prison is, they're a bit more benign if one reads the discourses and the commentary to it, which goes into extraordinary gory detail on the kind of punishments that the king would mete out. And then the Buddha is pointing, and it's all for sensual pleasures. Recognizing how much of our, just in an ordinary sense of how much, just in terms of how we get into conflict or difficulty and not even in actions, but in speech. How much of it is for just trying to be, you know, pleasurable, or you know, trying to alleviate a sense of tension or agitation in the mind. Just trying to find something distracting and interesting to talk about, and then ending up entangled in something that creates conflict and difficulty. So that reflection on the drawbacks gives a lot of impetus to step back, and then reflection on the way out. What's the way out? The escape, the release, nisarana. And then the Buddha pointing to relinquishment, disenchantment, dispassion, viraka. And that's that quality of disenchantment or dispassion shouldn't be seen as a numbing or a pushing away or rejection. It's just sort of, you know, when you line things up and you sort of look at things really clearly, and you say, and then you recognize that I say right now in this present moment, I have the opportunity to make the choice of turning to the coolness and clarity of settling and relinquishment, and it just, you know, the heart really opens up with that, and that there's a lot of joy that comes from that is not associated with, say, with sensual desire. So there's a brightness of heart that is generated. So it's a way out. There's other ways to relate, and then through the habit of sensual desire. Of course, you become a lousy consumer that way. But you're a lot more happy inside. The physical form, the Buddha, you know, pointing to, okay, physical form. Without physical form, without the body, say the benefit, of course, is, you know, we having good health, having energy, having the opportunity to practice, to seek out teachers, teachings, having all of our faculties enable us to really do those things which are skillful, are wholesome. It's a vehicle for giving us an opportunity seek teachings. Although there's a direct drawback of having a physical form, which can then be impinged upon by insects and creeping things. Good timing there. props for the teacher. There's a just having the a physical form, and there is the vulnerability of that physical form. It isn't an insentient object, so that it is impinged upon by cold, by heat, by the touch of flies, mosquitoes, wind, burning, creeping things. So that's a drawback. It's subject to aging, sickness, death, all of the vagaries of that can impinge upon it, threaten with the life force, threaten our existence. So that's a drawback. Definitely is something that creates a source of fear, a source of agitation, a source of both physical pain as well as emotional pain. So that that recognition. Also, it's it's such a source of identification. The physical form, we identify ourselves with our physical form, whether we're young, whether we're old, whether we're short or tall, whether we're heavy or light, whether we're attractive, unattractive. Whether we're male or female, all the physical form, so that it holds a certain power over us, and in the end it falls apart and dissipates back to the four elements. So it's a source of great attachment, and then it just falls apart, disappears. So it's a drawback. There's a certain painful element that we really need to investigate. When we see it clearly, and of course, it isn't as if it's without benefit. Again, that sense of the without the physical form, then sort of disembodied spirits floating around doesn't really work very well. Yeah. And the Buddha always points to the human form as an optimum base for us to be able to experience liberation, because we do have our faculties, we do have the experience of pleasure and pain, we do have the faculties for investigating and reflecting on these themes. What is subject to dissolution and change? What is subject to disappearance and recognizing the ephemeral nature of things, which is very difficult in a celestial realm or some of the realms that are, because oftentimes we think, oh, if only I could dwell in some refined state of bliss and not have to put up with the uncomfortable nature of the physical realm. And in Buddhist cosmology, then there's sort of heavenly realms, and then Brahma realms, where their lifespans are extraordinarily long. So I think the most refined realm, in terms of time span. I can't remember how many aeons, probably 84,000 aeons, which is like the 84,000 big bangs. It's like the arising and passing away of world systems, and at the Buddha's time, they thought in they had that conception of time being that great, and as you realize now that the spans of time are actually that's possible, because they're looking from that in terms of a series of sort of rising and passing away of universes. And was somebody who refines their consciousness and is able to steady the mind and be completely settled. The mind can stay in that state for a long time, but then after it passes away, or the impermanence of that manifests itself, then it sort of you wake up, reborn again, and you gotta go through it all over again. It's just so the reflection, and this is the Buddha pointing to the human birth as being the optimum, because we can reflect and investigate and see the benefit and the drawback of physical form, and then of course turning attention to the quality of release, of escape. Again, that word escape is not just sort of it's nisarana, it's also sort of like release as refuge as well. Like this is like a true refuge. Having seen things clearly, then just relinquishing. So it's the relinquishing the desire and attachment for physical form. And similar for feeling. The qualities of feeling, of course, is the pleasure, the benefit of feeling, in terms particularly, is that one can experience pleasant feeling. One can experience feelings of delight, rapture, joy. All of these feeling around the feelings and both on a physical level and a mental level are all accessible, and they create brightness, joy, which is, say, one can is part of one's own experience, and then that is something that can be generated and share, or, you know, and you say shared in the sense that when we contact each other, when we in the social realm, if we connect with each other from a place of joy and happiness, then that tends to spread. It tends to foster the development of joy in others. So that has a benefit in creating happiness for ourselves and others. The drawback, of course, is that feelings change. Our feelings sort of fluctuate and change. They go through peaks and valleys, and the valleys are the valleys of depression, feeling of alienation, feeling of suffering and difficulty, pain, and that is very fearful. It's very unwanted. So that the turning attention to the quality of release, of escape, of, and that it's through the quality of dispassion, disenchantment, and a steadiness of equanimity and non-attachment, a letting go. So like a radical letting go of our feelings, not in a sense of pushing away, but in a sense of recognition. When we clearly recognize, this is complicated, this is difficult, this is really unsettling. And there is the possibility of settling, of real peace. That the heart inclines to that quality of relinquishment. So that reflecting on these the drawbacks, the benefits. Because there's times when we need to encourage ourselves. You know, say we get stuck in, it's always going to be hopeless, it's always difficult, it's always painful. And you say, well, now that's a perception. That's only part of the picture. But similarly, there's times when we're just so swept up in the delightful aspects of things. And I say, it's not always going to, you better watch out, it's not always going to be like this. That sense of caution and care of not getting intoxicated by things, so that one gets complacent not very heedful or sharp, so that reflection on those, so that one's turning to, well, what is the release, and what is the way to real wisdom, what is the way to real peace, what's the way to real refuge? Because that's the certainly the goal of the Buddha's practice, and in a sense he's always emphasizing over and over again, and this is all that I teach, is the way to freedom from discontent and dissatisfaction, the way to true refuge. So that this opportunity for practice, this opportunity for realizing these teachings, we've got these tools for reflection, but we need to be always bringing it back into the present moment, into this sort of right here, right now moment. Because that's where we can, that's where we our choices are able to, we're able to see for ourselves, okay, yeah, I can affect this, I can put attention here. And that's where it has effect. So I'll offer that for reflection this evening.